The Productive Woman, episode 484. Hello and welcome to this episode of The Productive Woman. My name is Laura McClellan, and this is a podcast about productivity for busy women. My goal is to help you find the tools and encouragement you need to manage your time, life, stress, and stuff so you can accomplish the things you care about most and make a life that matters. Well, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me. In this episode, I'm so excited to share with you my conversation with wife, mom, novelist, and former sports journalist, Brooke Bentley, as part of our Productive Living recurring series. You'll find more information about Brooke, along with links to resources she recommends and the ways you can connect with her online, all in the show notes for this episode at theproductivewoman.com/484. I am so pleased to introduce to the Productive Woman listeners, Brooke Bentley. Brooke is a former television anchor and award-winning sports reporter. After graduating with a master's in journalism from the University of Southern California, she spent 2 years working for the Houston Texans as a media personality and over a decade working in sports journalism. She recently released her first novel called Sideline Confidential, which was inspired by her work as a journalist in the NFL. Brooke now devotes her time to championing local nonprofits, including Homemade Hope, where she serves as the development director. She and her husband live in Houston, Texas, and are raising 2 young boys. And I have really been looking forward to talking with her about all things sort of career, motherhood, productivity, and making a life that matters. So welcome, Brooke.
Laura, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm just really pleased to have you here, and I've been looking forward to talking with you. I gave a little bit of an introduction, but maybe we could start by you telling us a little more about who you are, where you are, what you do, anything you think that might be useful for us to know as we get into our conversation.
Yes. So I was born and raised in Houston, Texas, and I loved playing sports growing up. I loved also going to Houston Rockets games. And that was the big treat. That's what I asked for Christmas, Rockets tickets. And so my dad would take me and my sisters. And that was the first time I saw a female sports reporter, Lisa Nalowski, who is a local sports anchor in Houston. And at that point, that was sort of unheard of. And I remember seeing her in this red blazer. And I turned and looked at my dad and I said, I want to be that woman one day. And that always stuck with me. And I went on to college and I played volleyball at Davidson College. Then I went and got my master's in journalism at USC. And I really wanted to pursue that dream, but I was very scared about being a female in the NFL or in the NBA and thought, you know, do I have a place there working for one of these teams? And right out of graduate school, I did get a job working for the Houston Texans. And it was the most incredible experience and the most humbling experience. It was scary. I was one of the few females working for an NFL team at the time. And I learned so much about myself and how to navigate tricky situations. And being a young female with lots of big egos, mainly men, the players, the front office, you name it. And I really felt like those experiences needed to be a part of a book. But as you know, as being a productive woman, it's very hard to sit down when you have a busy job and write a book. So I'd write little stories here and there. And then I went on to work as a sports anchor and a sports reporter. And I had 2 children. And I kept thinking, I'm going to write this book one day. And I'd write bits and pieces when I'd have a moment. But it was so hard to really get it done. And it wasn't until 2020 when I had left sports reporting. I was working in nonprofit. And I was also able to have a little bit of distance from being in an office, having the busyness of my normal career day because of the pandemic. And I said, I'm going to sit down and write this book. I'm going to make this happen. And I really learned a lot about productivity and how to accomplish things and set your goals, be disciplined, be authentic to yourself. And so that's when I sat down and really wrote this book. And Sideline Confidential came out 3 years later. And it's been like the most rewarding part of my career.
Really, of all the things you've done, writing a novel about that's sort of based, I don't know how loosely or how closely on your own experiences.
Yes. You know, I think it's because I wanted to entertain, but I also wanted to share a message. And it's really hard for young women to be in male-dominated industries. And I wanted to convey that, and especially show for young women who haven't been there before that, listen, other people have done this and they've struggled, they've stumbled along the way. But here are things that you should know. You should find a mentor. You should know that there's other women who can help lift you up. And I had messages that I wanted to put in this book, and I felt very passionate about it. And it is really hard to also write a book when you have young children. I mean, the reality is I have children who, they'll get sick and be home from school, or they require still a lot of attention and I have to drive. Obviously, they can't drive. I drive them everywhere. And just to trying to make that happen and stay on schedule with trying to get my book out and meet deadlines. I mean, once I had my publisher, we were having deadlines come in. I really had to some nights stay up all night to make my deadline because my kids had had the flu the previous few days and I couldn't get everything done that I needed to get done. So I felt like when this book came out, it was my third child. I mean, I'd put so much of myself into it and I was like, wow, I've like literally given birth to my third child. It's been very rewarding. It was a lot of my heart and soul. Some of my personal experiences, also a lot of experiences of other women that I knew that worked in the NFL or in the NBA, actually. I had a friend who worked in the NBA who helped me some as well. And then some just fiction. I mean, some, as my editor said, it's not your memoir. Make it fun and juicy if you want to. It's not your story. So I could do that too.
Yeah. I do want to get into talking about the message that you talked about and just the story itself. And I can say that having read the book, the messages come through, but I didn't feel like it was a preachy book. It was an entertaining, interesting, and sometimes thought-provoking novel. But those messages came through very well. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk a little bit about how you're managing all those things. You've kind of touched on the challenges of trying to work a job, take care of a family, be a spouse, and write a book, and all those things at the same time. And so I'd love to get into that a little bit, how you're doing that, maybe provide a little context for some of the things we're going to talk about. So maybe I'll start with, if there is such a thing for you as a typical day right now at this point in your life, what might that look like?
So I'm a morning person, Laura, and I find that I do my best work at the earliest hours. And so a lot of times that means I get up early, like before 5, so I can start working at 5. And if I'm writing, I want to be writing before my kids are up, when my house is quiet, and that's when I know I get my best work done. So I get up early to work, and then I get my kids off to school. I do breakfast, bake lunches, the whole thing, and get them off to school. And then I come back and I work some more, and I'm someone who likes to take a lunch break, and I'll walk, I'll play tennis, something like that. I like to be outside, do an activity, and I'm very involved in the community, and the nonprofit Homemade Hope that my sister and I started is something that for me now I've been less probably on the actual roll up your sleeves, stocking warehouses, being with the children. I'm more behind the scenes now just because that's what was going to work better with my career as a writer, but I'm still very involved in the organization. So I need to fit in. I schedule my time for that. I really live on a schedule, and I'm someone who feels like I need to, I put in my calendar on my phone and in a planner exactly kind of how much I need to devote to these things. And one day sometimes it needs to be all Homemade Hope. I mean, that's the day where I have to get things done. For Homemade Hope, the organization that I was speaking of, it's an organization that teaches at-risk children how to cook healthy foods. It's an after-school program. And so I can do the grant writing, or I can do the behind-the-scenes work at home and figure out when that is best to do. And for me, that sometimes I do more in the afternoon or in the evening after my children go to bed. But I live on schedules, and I love lists and calendars.
And are you a digital girl or do you use paper calendars and lists?
Okay, so I do both because I really do like writing with my hand on a paper copy. I mean, I have an old school calendar that I keep, and I like being able to it's sort of therapeutic. And I sometimes like to be away from my phone, but it's just not possible. I put everything in my phone because I need to have addresses and timers and all of that stuff. I mean, I set the reminders, I do all of the stuff. So, I mean, I have to have the technology because that's the reality. reality of our world, but I always write it out as well. And I find it therapeutic. And sometimes I'll wake up at night and I'll realize I've forgotten something on my list. And so if I can just, or in my calendar, so I'll handwrite it on a little pad next to my bed, and then I can go back to sleep knowing that it's written. And then I'll put it in my calendar, a handwritten entry before I go to my phone, because I love those old school calendars and planners. Mm. I can't help myself, Laura.
Well, nothing wrong with that. And I keep my calendar most of the time in my phone, but as technology loving as I am, my to-do list most days is on a card on my desk. It's something about being able to write it out, have it there looking at it, and then cross it out manually when it's done. It just works best for me.
Oh, me too. It's so great to cross something off the list. I mean, it feels so good.
Yeah. And I have no shame in admitting how many times I will write something on the list that I've already done just so I can cross it off.
I know, me too.
So with all the things you have going on, what would you say maybe are your biggest challenges when it comes to being as productive as you want to do, getting the things done that matter most to you?
I mean, it's very hard when you have young children because things just happen. And I think that for me was the hardest part. Now my kids are a little bit older. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, but you know, they need me and they are not completely independent. So I have found that was sort of, you know, just life happens. It happens with everyone, but we know, especially when younger kids get sick. And that, I think that was the harder thing. And my youngest son has celiac. So we had to we found that out a couple of years ago, and navigating that was a little tricky and took quite a bit of time. But other than that, it's just not enough hours in the day. I mean, I just wish I had a little bit more time to do things. And I've really learned to prioritize. I mean, I'm a good manager of my time, but I know in any given day, not everything is going to get done. And I would love for all these things to get done on my list that day, but it's not going to happen. How do I prioritize and doing the hardest things first? Mm. And that for me, because then you don't stew about it, doesn't weigh on you. Just, you know, pick up the phone and make that call that you know is tricky, or, you know, writing something that I know is going to be difficult, a part of the book that's a scene that I've been avoiding. I mean, if I can do that first thing, that is very helpful for me. And so that's why I handwrite a lot of lists, is that I reprioritize what I need to be doing. I also use my lists app in my phone. I mean, it's not like I don't use technology, but I find that I go to handwrite it first and then I enter it all into my phone apps. And just keeping those priority lists for me is very helpful, and doing the hardest things first.
Yeah.
Then I know it doesn't weigh on me at night when I go to sleep. I got those tricky things done.
Yeah. That's such good advice and something good to remember, that when we have lots and lots of things to do, if we can take a moment to figure out what's the most important thing, the thing that's going to make the biggest difference in my day if I get this done, and then focusing on that first, it can get you started with some momentum for one thing. But if nothing else, you can lay your head on the pillow at night knowing, well, I didn't get everything done, but I got the things that were most important.
Exactly. And I really found that once I made that shift, that my day felt a lot calmer, even if I didn't get it all done. I'd gotten those big, important things done first, and that felt really good.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about kind of your career path, because you have a lot of things to say, both in your novel and in some other things you've written, that really made me think a lot about the choices that we make as women and the impact that they have on us and our future and the people around us. And your first journalistic career, we talked about it already, after you got out of school, put you kind of in the heart of a very male-oriented, kind of testosterone-driven arena of professional football. And for our the international members of our community, the work that we've been talking about, the NFL, that, for those who don't know, is the National Football League, the main football league, professional football league here in the United States for American football. And that's the arena you started your journalistic career in. How you talked a little bit about it, but can you tell us a little more about sort of how you ended up there and what was that experience like for you as you've said, as a woman in a very male-dominated environment?
Yeah, so Laura, I got that job right out of graduate school. And so I was in my 20s, and I was really not fully prepared to handle being in such a big, powerful sports league because I was working for the team. And at that point, there weren't that many women working for NFL teams. It's changed quite a bit. In fact, since 2020, I read, according to the NFL, they've hired more than 120% more women since 2020. I mean, they've really made a concerted effort. But when I was there, and this is 2006, 2007, 2009, it was different. And so, you know, I started with the Texans and my boss called me in the first day of work and said, listen, we've never had a female travel with a team. I'm a little concerned about the dynamics. I think you need to ride in your own bus. And I'm looking at him going, what are you talking about? Ride in my own bus. He said, yeah, you know, to games, you shouldn't be with the players and the coaches. You could be a distraction. They're not used to having you around. I think you need to be in your own bus. I was so confused, thinking they play in front of 70,000 fans. They play next to cheerleaders. How could I be a distraction to them? And, but that was how unaccustomed they were to having a female around. And so I started out going to games in my own bus. That changed because once the personnel, the front office, the players, the coaches got to know me and they really liked me and they knew I was a professional, they let me in and I was riding the bus with everyone else. But that thought of being sort of relegated to your own bus and having that be your work existence, I thought, I'm going to write a book about this and this is going to be my opening scene, which it is in Sideline Confidential, because it really did take me aback. I was so shocked that I wouldn't be able to ride with the rest of my coworkers or with the players, coaches that, you know, everyone else was going on the bus with. And like I said, it didn't stand for that long. So things changed. But that's when I just realized this is really not an organization that is used to having a lot of women around. And I really had to learn to manage that because a lot of the men, some of them, most of them are twice my age. A lot of them hadn't been around females in a football team. They didn't really know what to do. And I wasn't seasoned enough to stand up for myself, to feel like I had the authority to stand up for myself. I was so grateful to have this job. I thought, oh, I can't say anything because they might fire me. So, you know, I really learned to walk this tightrope. And what I found was that, you know, they want you to be pretty, but not sexy. They want you to know a lot, but don't try and outshine the men in the room. And so you have to navigate that. And that's something I also wanted to convey in the book. Now, listen, I also worked with women. I worked for the NFL for a couple of Super Bowls, and I got to know women from other teams, and I would hear stories, and they were awful. I mean, that's what I ended up putting more in my book. What really raised the stakes for me is what happened out of Washington, D.C. with the former Redskins, now Commanders. And it was a culture of, it was a toxic culture where women were exploited. I mean, they had congressional testimony about it, that cheerleaders were propositioned. Women who worked there were receiving just really harassing notes. You know, it was really bad. And so their owner, Dan Snyder, you know, he actually sold the team. And so he was sort of run out because of that. But hearing those stories and connecting with those women, that's what helped raise the stakes in the book for me. But I wanted to, like you said, I wanted to make it entertaining and not preachy. I wanted some of this to come through, but in an entertaining way so people could read it and not think that I was just preaching at them. I you know, wanted to show a glimpse, if you will.
Yeah. As you were talking about that and thinking about what I read in the novel, you know, even in 2024, where, in my opinion, women have made great strides in achieving equality in the workplace and all that, there are still women experiencing what you were talking about a minute ago, about being, you know, the young person at the workplace, dealing with things that they're afraid to speak up about because they don't lose their job, they don't, you know, they want to be a team player, all those sorts of things. What lessons have you learned from your experience and, you know, looking back on it now from a few years beyond, that you might share with women who maybe are in that position? You know, they're maybe not working for the NFL, but they're in a situation where they're being sort of overlooked or not treated the way they should be and aren't sure how to deal with it.
For me, it's so much about finding a mentor. Finding someone who's been mm-hmm. there, who can guide you, who can give you advice, who really has a knowledge base and the credibility to, if you need someone to have your back, come in and stand up to someone, you know, with you, I have found having a mentor to be so important. And now I feel like I can be that for young women coming in. And it's been wonderful that I've had different young women reach out to me and ask me about their roles with different news organizations, or, you know, they are thinking about taking this job or they want this job, but they, you know, heard about this work culture at that place. So I feel like it's my turn, you know, to do that for these young women. But for me, it was finding mentors. And that was the most helpful part of my journey. It was, at first, I didn't within necessarily Texans organization, but because I was working for them, I got connected with other women who worked for various networks nationally. And I met some incredible women along the way. And that was really, for me, very helpful, and something I put in the book with one of the characters, Sheridan, who's a mentor to Blake, the lead protagonist. And so I just think finding that person who's been there and knows is so, it's just, yeah, it's really meaningful.
Yeah. And what's interesting for me, you know, I went to law school later in life and started my legal career after I'd had my children, and came into it at a time when, even though it was in the late 20th century, the law was still sort of, the leadership was primarily male. I mean, there were, you know,
right,
important female partners and that sort of thing. I was very fortunate to have a mentor from the beginning who was a man, but who was very aware of the situation for the women at the firm, and really would go to bat for me and for others to make sure that we were treated fairly and those sorts of things, who helped me learn to navigate that profession, the sort of the business side of it, as much as learning the law. So I am a big advocate for finding a mentor wherever that might be, but specifically if you're in a situation where you're having to navigate interesting things as a woman, having a woman who's been through that is a really helpful thing, I think.
It is. You know, it's funny you say that though, Laura, because I did have two friends in journalism. One worked for the local newspaper, the Houston Chronicle, and the other was a host on the sports radio station that covered the team. It's the most popular sports radio station in town. And they also really helped me because they could see that I was struggling with it all. So I wanted to include that in the book too, because the book isn't necessarily about, you know, men versus women. And there's these wonderful male characters in the book as well. It's more about how it is hard for young women to navigate this. And that, you know, but I wanted to include these really wonderful male characters as well. And so there's a great one in the book, but he's very much based off of someone that was like that to me and really helped me out a lot, and would tell the team, you know, hey, you should have Brooke do this interview. She's really the one who should be doing it. And I would say, you know, it was great, you know, and people would listen to him. So it was very helpful because he had been around for a long time, and he's now in the Hall of Fame for NFL media, and and he's loved my book, which has been wonderful. Now he's still, you know, advocating for me. But when he advocated for me at that point, people would listen. And that was huge.
Yeah. He was one of my favorite characters in the book.
Mine too. Because it's actually based off someone I know. Not everyone is, but he is.
Absolutely. Are you writing other books now? Or are you working on anything else?
I told myself I'm going to start writing at the end of March. My sister's getting married at the end of the month. And after that, I'm going to start writing again. It has been, you know, I didn't really appreciate how much media I would be doing after this book came out. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I had this new audience that was interested in my book, and I was getting asked to do television and radio. And I do have that background. So I did get asked because some people knew me from those areas. But I wanted to put my heart and soul into getting this book out in the world. And so I've done that. And then I also do work for Homemade Hope. And I had agreed 2 years prior to head up a big fundraising event for our school. My children go to a school that is part of a church in Houston. And so it was a very busy fall for me. And I just didn't have the bandwidth to write. And I knew that. And I told myself I wasn't going to expect that of myself. So now I'm itching to write. I cannot wait to start writing again.
So you got an idea in mind? Well, that's great.
I do. Yes. So I love sports, obviously. I was a sports reporter, but I want to write a book about Little League and these parents living out their dreams through their kids. But there's also all these different dramas going on this team, you know, so there's just all the behind the scenes dramas with these different families. And I've sat in the stands at enough Little League games to see the drama. And I just keep writing notes. And someone said, are you going to put us in your book? I'm like, oh, no. But gosh, this is inspiring me.
That's wonderful. It sounds like it'll be a fun one to write.
I'm excited to do it.
You've written some other things, though, as well. I read an essay that you wrote, I think fairly recently, for an online publication that I hadn't heard of before called Mother.
Yes.
And in that essay, you wrote about the pressure to have it all. And obviously, my life and yours, our lives, our career paths have been very different. But much of what you wrote in there really resonated with me, even though my kids are grown and gone. And one of the things you talked about in that essay is about making the choice to take a sabbatical from your television career while your children were young. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that decision, what you were thinking about as you made that decision and how you felt about it then.
You know, Laura, at that point, I was trying to be a really present mom. I was trying to be a really present wife, and I had this bustling career in sports reporting. And I felt like I was doing none of them very well, though, because I just always felt like I was rushing from one thing to the next and trying so hard to be this perfect, you know, mom or wife, or be at all the station events, or go out and, you know, really be gung-ho climbing the ladder. And none of it, I felt like I was fully into, you know, one area. And I was struggling with it. And I realized that I needed to take a step back and prioritize and see what was happening. And I was trying to have it all. And you can have it all, but at least for me, not in one season. There's different seasons where there's different priorities. And my youngest son, I mentioned earlier in our conversation, he has celiac disease, but at that point we didn't know it. And he was going through a lot of testing and we were trying to figure out what was going on with him. And I struggled with the decision, but then I knew, I just like had this feeling in the pit of my stomach that I couldn't go on broadcasting. He needed me and I needed to take a step away from that because my broadcasting schedule was nights, weekends, holidays, basically the opposite schedule of my family. And, you know, so many women are able to make it work and it is incredible. I mean, I look at Hannah Storm and what she has done, but it is very hard and you make these sacrifices. And for me, I could see my son needed me at that time. And so it was a difficult decision because it was the career I had literally dreamed of since I was a little girl. But I also knew it was the right choice. And I thought, I'm going to get back to storytelling in one way or another. But right now I need to be here for my family and this needs to be the season of my family. And so I made that choice. And I think the first year, the hardest was seeing people that I had worked with or peers that I've had in my reporting career. And I would see them on TV or see them get promoted from a local job to a national job. And I'd look at them and I'd have a little bit of like, oh, I wish that was me. I wish I was up there. But then I also knew I was doing the right thing for my family. And I thought, I want to do something meaningful. And my sister had just started a nonprofit and it had grown just exponentially, very organically, and she needed help. And I said, I want to help you. And, you know, it has been such a fulfilling experience to work with her and to know that we're making a difference in the community. So it was, everything ended up falling into place. And I did get back to storytelling. I told the story through a book. But it was a difficult decision for me, Laura. It was really hard, but I do not regret it for a second. And it was 100% the right decision.
Well, and that's what I was wondering, how now looking back from a few years later, how do you feel about it now? And it sounds like you've answered that question.
Yeah. You know, it's so hard, when you have a dream like that to let it go, but I also didn't dream to be that stressed out and feel like I was just running a million miles an hour in a million different directions. I just didn't feel like I was really being able to be present with everyone. I wanted it, but then I would I'd be with my kids and then my mind would be thinking about a story that I had to, or an interview I had in the morning. You know, I was just going in so many different directions. And, you know, it was like, okay, my kids, my work, and then maybe my husband, that was the priority. And he could feel it. And he knew what was going on. A very supportive, wonderful husband. And I'm like, well, he's going to have to wait for right now. Cause like, we got this stuff going on. But I just felt like I was sort of spinning. And I realized I needed to stop. And I stepped back and thought, what can I do to really like find fulfillment with myself, but also help my family out? And so by taking a break from journalism, I was able to get my son in a better place and then find a career that's fulfilling for me and one that has offered me flexibility to be able to write as well. So it just all ended up working out, but it was a very difficult decision in the moment.
Yeah. Well, and you talk in the essay about the concept kind of seasons of life, and you mentioned that a minute ago. And that's one of the things that really resonated with me, because at different stages of our life, different things kind of come to the forefront, don't they? And the hard thing is nobody can make that decision for us. We all have to, you know, find that place for ourselves of what matters most right now.
Right.
And choosing to put one thing at the forefront at a given time doesn't mean the other things don't matter. It just means, you know, you've made a decision about where your very, you know, finite resources of time and energy and attention are going to go at any given time. And like you, I've had moments, you know, in my career, I've seen people I went to law school with or people I worked with in early in my career moving forward and, you know, being confirmed as a judge or something, which is something I always thought I would love to do. And I start to feel some regret. And then I think, well, no, wait a minute. I made a choice about how much time I was going to devote to my career at the stage when my kids were still at home. And so I can't regret that choice. I know it was the right one for us. And so, you know, remembering that everybody's path is going to be a little different, and I'm never going to be a judge. And I know that. And I'm okay with that because I've got 5 great kids, 10 grandchildren who are pretty great. And that, for me personally, outweighs the loss of the possibility of being a judge.
You know, for me, it's been so interesting because I did put my kids first for a while, because like I said, my son had some health struggles and we were really needing to figure that out. And so that was the season of being a mom and focusing on my children. And these last 6 months since my book came out, it has been about my career. And it hadn't been about that for a while. It's been the season of me and my book. And my husband's like, this is your time. I want you to have it. We got this at home. Like, you go out there and get your book out there. And I hadn't had that season in a while. And it's been really incredible to have this season be about my book and about my career and my work, because it hadn't been for quite some time. And I do agree with that. You know, it is so hard. I mean, there are people who do, they manage to have it all. They have the secret sauce. That is incredible. But for me, what I found, I was trying really hard and not really feeling like I was 100% happy or giving it my all to one area. I was just spread too thin and spinning. And so when I stepped back and thought, all right, this is right now, like you said, you don't get to choose, but this is what you're handed. Okay, how are you going to deal with it? What are you going to put first? What are you going to put your heart and soul into? You know, quite a few seasons, it has been my children. And so when the book came out and it became the season, oh, this is the season with my career, it's been a little bit of a shift. And so I think, you know, as I get to writing my next book, it might be the season of just really, you know, giving my husband a lot of pampering and attention, because he's picked up a lot of the load while I've been out touring and doing my book promotion. So we'll have a new season. But yeah, I find that makes me feel also just more fulfilled. It's not like I'm trying and failing at all these other things. Like, okay, wait, this was the season of my book and I did it. I fulfilled that, and that feels good for me. And I gave it my all, you know. Now I'm going to pump my husband up. It'll be his season. And so, you know, that's
it's great to have a supportive spouse, isn't it? My husband has always been that way. When we made the decision, when we had a house full of kids, to move across country for me to go to law school, people looked at us and asked him, what's going on here? And he said, this is her moment. This is, you know,
yes.
And when the opportunity came up, he was, and I talked to him about it, he was like, let's do it. Let's make it happen. So
that's awesome.
You cannot buy that kind of support in helping, you know, make your life into what you want it to be. So choosing wisely with partners is, I highly recommend it.
Yes.
So, you know, to that point, I guess, what tips might you offer to a woman who's listening, who's maybe struggling with trying to have or do it all at this point in her life? Any suggestions or thoughts you might offer for her?
I think letting go of that expectation of yourself. It is so much pressure for a woman to put on herself to have all of those things. And to instead look at, all right, what is in this time in my life, in this season in my life, what is giving me the most fulfillment and what needs me the most and who needs me the most? Is it, you know, and then in just trying to figure out how to have those different seasons kind of blend and work together. And we can't control it. Like you said, life hands us these seasons, but I think we can make some choices and say, all right, I'm going to let that go. Right now is just not the time that I can climb the ladder at work, or right now is not the time where I can be at every volunteer event at school. I love my kids, but they're going to be okay. These 6 months, I got to do X, Y, and Z. I think, you know, it's okay to say no to things and to then say, this is the season of my career. This is the season where I really want to focus on, you know, my marriage or my children, and say, oh, that's okay, because the other things will have their time too. And just that shift of letting go of those expectations, because we put so much pressure on ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's important too, when we're in that place where we're feeling like we're not measuring up or we're struggling to keep up or whatever it might be, you know, to your point about expectations, I think often we look around us at other women, whether women we know or women we see in the media, and we think, well, she's doing it all, so I should be able to.
Right.
I think that sort of comparison never serves anyone well, because first of all, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. And second of all, you don't know what her life is and why she's able to do whatever it is she's doing. And you don't know what regrets she might have.
Exactly. I think it's so hard too with social media, Laura. You see these pictures, but you don't really know what the story is behind those pictures. You know, it's easy to portray that, oh, I've got it all. Look at this picture on Instagram. I have it all. And that's really not the case, or there's struggles or there's sadness or there's different, you know, emotional journeys that we just don't see behind those photos, behind these celebrities or people in the media. And can put that pressure on ourselves. But if we can somehow take it off and realize humaning is very hard and we're all trying, mm-hmm. but let's do the best we can with what we're being dealt right now. Okay, this is the time at work where I really have got to just roll up my sleeves and get after it. Okay, let's figure out how I can best manage that for my kids. But this isn't the season where I'm just going to be at every PTA event, or I'm going to be at, you know, volunteering at this or that. And saying no is important, you know, then you know you're prioritizing what you're saying yes to. Because if you say yes to everything, then you haven't prioritized.
Yeah, that's so true. Our conversation, Brooke, is part of what I call our Productive Living series here on the podcast. And on this podcast, we talk about productivity all the time, but we talk about it as more than just getting things done, checking things off a to-do list. We talk about a productive woman as being one who orders her life in such a way as to maximize her positive impact on the world around her, and in the sense of making a life that matters, as each woman has to define it for herself. What does it mean to you to make a life that matters?
You know, for me, it is about making sure not you're fulfilling yourself, and that you're coming from your true authentic self, a self that is open-hearted, a self that is open-minded and ready to learn and listen. I think that's so important when you can do that, start with yourself in that regard. But for me, being someone who works in nonprofit, who works in the community, I want to know, how can I hate to say leave my mark, but what is something I can do on whatever scale that is to make some sort of impact? And within the confines of what my life is and what the reality is in my life, we can all do something. And maybe that's, you know, looking like something very small, you know, a gift to someone, a bigger tip or something like that, a gift to someone in need, or maybe it's on a much bigger level. But I do think that there's so much to be said for finding some way where you feel like you can make an impact. And it doesn't have to be a monetary gift. It's like, you know, what can I do that is somehow affected another life. And I see that a lot in the work that I do. A lot of these kids just want someone to believe in them, to have hope for them. You know, they want someone to know that they matter. And so I heard this on a Brené Brown podcast, but we were talking about, you know, people who are on the street. Sometimes they just want to be looked at and recognized as human beings. And so I'll carry, it's so hot in Houston, I'll have just bottles of water that I can give to someone just to be like, hey, you know, this is a gift to you. I want you to have this water. I'm not handing out money, but I just want to, you know, hey, I know you're probably thirsty. It's really hot out here. So little things that you can do that you feel like within the confines of your life that somehow make an impact, I think are so important.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even something as simple as, you know, when you're checking out your groceries at the grocery store, actually looking the person in the eye who is bagging your groceries or running them through the register, just looking them in the eye when you hand them your credit card or whatever it is, just making that personal contact and smiling at someone can change the course of their day.
Yes.
I think. And that's something that doesn't cost anything.
No. And they're being recognized as people. And that's so important. And I think that that's all something that we can think about. I do the same thing. I always try and be personable and say hello, look the person in the eye at the grocery store, because I know how much that means to someone. And so someone actually said that to me once. And so now I do it all the time because she said, thank you for talking to me. And I thought, oh, wow, that little conversation made her, you know, feel important. Yeah. And so, you know, I totally agree.
It's easy to go through our day, especially running errands and things, with kind of our head down, trying to get things done and be gone and never actually sort of connect with any of the people around us. And I think it makes a huge difference, both for us and for them, if we just take that second to look people in the eye and smile at them. I don't want to end this conversation without talking. You've touched on it kind of in passing a couple different times about the nonprofit that you're working for. Can you just take a couple minutes and tell us a little more about what that is and what you all are doing there? Because I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. So Homemade Hope started with my sister. She has a culinary background and an education background. And she just wanted to volunteer and teach kids how to cook healthy snacks after school. So she was working at a homeless shelter doing that. And then another homeless shelter asked if she could help out. And they said, well, maybe you could do dinner. And she thought, okay, well, I'm just a volunteer. I mean, I have a job. So it just sort of organically grew, and people asked if they could donate. And she said, well, you know, not really an official nonprofit, but I came on and we started that, you know, we said, let's make this happen. And it did. It's just been amazing. Laura, last year we served over 11,000 children in the Houston area. We have an after school programs 5 days a week. We also partner with Urban Harvest, but they have a mobile food market that takes fresh produce into areas that are food deserts. And we teach the families there how to cook these foods, because a lot of them, I mean, they aren't familiar with kale or with beets and how to cook some of these different items. So we teach these young children how to cook healthy meals. We also have lessons around them. So it's, you know, International Food Unit. They'll make Western African peanut stew, but also learn something about that recipe. Or they made sushi with avocado and cucumbers, and they learn about Japanese culture. There's a lesson. And then there's also just that sense of the kids get to feel important. They feel like they're getting to do something that they would never otherwise get to do. Plus, a lot of these kids are food insecure. These children need the food. They're hungry, and they make a big meal and they take leftovers home. And for them, sometimes it's the only nutritious meal they're getting that day. You know, a lot of these children too, they rely on breakfast and lunch to be served at school. And school lunches have gotten better, but you know, they're not getting the same vegetables and fruits and things that they get with Homemade Hope. So it's been an incredible program, and to see the growth, you know, the pandemic, just the kids, we didn't stop. We kept going. We did outdoor tenting because the facilities were closed where we were, and they wouldn't let us in. We said, okay, well, can we come to your parking lot? So we set up tents and just kept going, got a mobile kitchen. We said, we're not stopping. We're ready. These kids need us. They are not getting their lunches at school. I know they need us. So we just set up in a parking lot since we couldn't go inside. And that's when we really grew, because so many other other facilities said, oh gosh, you're doing that. Well, we want that over, you know, at our community center. So it's been a humbling thing to see and to know, you know, there's quite a few kids who say they probably wouldn't have gone to college without our program because you have to keep your grades to come. So if you're not doing well in school, we say, okay, you can come earlier and one of the volunteers will help you with your homework. But you have to, if you're failing, you can't come unless we're helping you get your grades up. So all of our kids are, you know, making grades, and we've had, these are a lot of kids who you're lucky they're going to graduate from high school. We have one that has a full scholarship right now and wants to be a doctor. Yeah, we've had, you know, one who graduated from University of Arkansas. She's now in the Houston Police Force. I mean, it's incredible. I could tell you thousands of stories. And my sister ended up adopting one of the students, and he's a senior at Colorado College now. So it's been pretty incredible.
Is there a website or something if people want to learn more about what you're doing?
Yes, it's homemadehope.org.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's fascinating. Boy, talk about, making a difference. If you can make a difference in the lives of children, you are going to change the world.
Yes.
No question.
Yes.
As we get ready to wrap up, I want to ask you a question that I ask every guest, just because I think we can all learn from each other in the answers to this question. We've talked about some of the systems and tools you have in place to sort of manage all the different things that you're doing and the things that are important to you. But even with all that and all the things you've achieved and all those things, do you ever have a day when it all gets away from you or you just get completely stressed out and overwhelmed? And if so, what do you do to get back on track?
Oh, I had one of those days last week, Laura. I just felt like everything, I was rushing and everything was happening that I wasn't getting things done. I wasn't meeting deadlines. And then I can get a little manic about it. And so what I have found for myself is I have to take a break and do some deep breathing and then really sit. Like I'll either do a meditation app, I'll do Headspace or something like that. Or if I don't have access to that or not really in a place to do it, I'm in a parking lot or something, I'll just sit and breathe for a few minutes. And then I will say, all right, what is the next step? What is the one thing that I really need to get done today? And the other stuff can wait. And I kind of regroup. I'll do that with my kids. I'm like, let's regroup. I will do a personal regroup and I'll say, let's regroup. But I find deep breathing is very much necessary for me to calm myself down, calm my nervous system down, and then figure out what is the one thing I can accomplish today that I know will make me feel better. It's so hard. You know, we lead these very busy lives, and especially when you're driving all these different locations and sometimes you get in traffic and there's nothing you can do about it. I just will like sit there and try and breathe as deeply as I can and try and calm myself down. Cause I'm like, there's nothing I can do. I can't make this move. It's just what it is, what it is. And that next thing is going to be there. And let me figure out what needs to be done. What has to get done today? Who, you know, what can I do that's just within the confines of this day and this time? And letting the rest go. It's hard.
Yes, it is. And anybody who's ever driven in Houston or up here in Dallas will know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, the traffic in Houston is so bad. It stresses me out a lot. And my kids will say, Mom, you can't go anywhere. What can you do? And I'm like, you're right. There's nothing I can do. You're exactly right. I know you needed to be someone has to be a baseball. The other person needs to be a basketball. And I'm rushing around trying to get everyone everywhere. But this is just what it is. So just take a few breaths.
So Brooke, what's next for you? Do you have anything coming up either professionally or personally that you're really excited about or looking forward to?
Well, I've really been promoting the book, and it's obviously very exciting because Taylor Swift has brought me this whole new audience. So I've had a lot, you know, all of this media promotion that has continued through the Super Bowl. So I'm going to continue doing that. And then, you know, I think after Easter, I'm going to start my job of writing again. And I am so excited to write my Little League book. And I've also been asked about writing a sequel to Sideline Confidential. So I'm thinking about that as well. I have a few thoughts on that. I think I'm going to do actually some interviews more and do more of my background and information. And I have an idea of where I want it to go, but I want to talk to some people who are in the business right now, navigating that as young moms and get some ideas from them. And yeah, I think I'll be turning to those two projects.
Sounds like fun to me. I know at least some members of your extended family are also pretty artistic in their own ways. Anybody besides your rather famous uncle?
Well, so my uncle is country musician Dirk Bentley, and he loved the book, which was really exciting for me. I sent it to him. He was on tour. He said, I'll read it once I finish the tour. You know, it's just so crazy right now. And then he ended up reading it in 2 days, you know, but I think they had a gap between shows, and he picked it up and said, oh my gosh, I can't put it down. It's so good. So that's fun. And then I have a sister who lives in Los Angeles, and she's been an actress and producer. And so, you know, it's fun because there's been some interest in my book to translate to screen. So I've been talking to some people about that, and that process just started. So she's helped me some with that, but I have a manager that I'm working with, and, you know, we're getting that going. So we'll see. It's a world I don't know. I don't know the Hollywood side of, you know, optioning a book and what goes into it. So it's been fun. We just started it, and a few people are looking at it, a few agents of some celebrities, some actresses. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited.
How fun. Well, I mean, I can certainly say, and I'm not a particularly sports oriented person, but I really enjoyed the book. It was an interesting story and kind of a fun peek behind the scenes of a professional sports team. And so I can definitely recommend the book, even for those of us who aren't particularly athletic or sports oriented. I have to confess, I did not watch the Super Bowl. So, you know.
Well, no, thank you, Laura, because, you know, that's one thing that I think it appeals to women and just women's journeys and their careers. And so I've had quite a few women tell me, I don't really watch football. I don't like it. But I really enjoyed reading your book because it resonated with me in other ways. And so that to me, I think is so meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brooke, where can people connect with you online if they want to learn more about what you're doing, or I don't know, maybe have a question for you? Certainly they can find your book. We'll put links to the book and Homemade Hope and all the other things in the show notes. But if somebody wants to kind of follow you or find out what you're up to, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
My website, brookebentley.com. I have my email address on there, and it has the mother article as well as all the information about the book. Quite a few people email me from that website, and I love getting emails, and I will answer them back as soon as I get them.
Great. Well, before we go, I think a lot of the women who listen to this podcast are here looking for ideas, for help, maybe just some encouragement on getting the things done that matter and making a life that matters as they define it for themselves. Thinking about kind of how the things we've talked about today fit into that objective, do you have any last words for the woman who might be looking for some help or encouragement?
Well, I mean, I think really, Laura, it goes back to what we were saying about not putting too much pressure on ourselves to do it all and find those seasons in life and prioritize within those seasons. And I think getting the hard things done first, it's so hard to face some of the tasks that we have. I mean, it's not easy. Let's say if you're having to let someone go at work, or if you're having to deal with some sort of behavioral issue, or, you know, the list is so long, but being able to get to the hard things first is just, to me, I think the best way then to proceed for your day, because then I think I find myself so much more productive when I get the hard things done at the beginning of the day.
Very good advice. Thank you so much, Brooke.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure.
I'm really glad to have had the chance to talk with Brooke and appreciated her insights about life seasons and making a life that matters in a way that works best for you and your family. If you're interested in learning more about Brooke, check out her website, her novel, and definitely the essay that she wrote for the Mother magazine website. We'll have links to all that in the show notes. But in the meantime, I'd love to know what you think. Do you have any questions or comments about the things that Brooke and I talked about in this episode? You can share those in the comment section of the show notes for this episode at theproductivewoman.com/484. Or you can post a comment or question on the Productive Woman Facebook page or in the Productive Woman Community Facebook group if you're a member there. If you prefer to share your thoughts with me privately, I welcome hearing from you. You can email your questions, comments, or suggestions to me at feedback@theproductivewoman.com, and I'd love to hear from you. I think that's it. If you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to tell a friend or share an episode using the social sharing buttons that you'll find at the top of each episode page on the website. And let's grow the community. And that is it for this episode of The Productive Woman. Thank you so much for spending this time with me and with Brooke. I hope you enjoyed it and found something in it that was helpful to you. I look forward to talking with you again very soon. So until next time, remember, extend grace to each other and especially to yourself this week, and go make your life matter.